CliffCentral.com. Good morning and welcome to Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo. Very excited to be back with you today. My guest today is Gert Skombi, the MD of T-System South Africa. Good morning, Gert.
Good morning, Mpumi, and thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for joining us after a long weekend. It's bright and early, straight onto the radio. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I had an excellent break. I had the privilege to go fishing in Angola.
Wow.
For the past couple of days, which is a real great adventure. It is really different this morning to start like this, but I'm really refreshed. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. Gert, you know, on the show we talk about disruption, and we really try to frame it beyond technology. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation today because, I mean, part of your life you spent in a farming family. You grew up on a farm. Can you maybe just give us some background to yourself, where you grew up? I know you're from Pretoria. You've studied at UCT and done your MBA. So really done a lot of stuff in your career. Growing up in Pretoria, how was that?
Yeah, I've grown up actually on the farm, 2 hours away from Pretoria.
Okay.
So I'm a real farmer boy in a very Afrikaans conservative community. And from early age, I worked on the farm, and I learned a lot through working, through taking responsibility, also from my dad at that stage, who had a big part of my life, and really preparing me, you know, in terms of what I did later on, and even today in terms of taking something and improving it. On the farm, it was always about, you know, how can you get more out of what you have in terms of better practices, understanding how systems work. And that's how I got into studying industrial engineering in at Pretoria University.
Okay.
And from there onwards, I was privileged to go and work at PwC at the advisory services straight afterwards for 2 years, doing management consulting using my industrial engineering background. And then I had a real excellent year at UCT in 1993 doing my MBA, which was a powerful year in terms of learning lots of things of life. It was a big sacrifice. I was married at that point in time, so Stella and myself went down to Cape Town, and it was a very full year in terms of learning academically. But we decided beforehand we want to make the most out of 1 year, and that's where I learned how much you can do in 1 year.
Yeah.
So academically, I did extremely well. Socially, we were the only Afrikaans people in the full-time MBA class, so that was a
You're saying it was very interesting being, you know, going to Cape Town from Pretoria and being in 93, the only... Which seems a bit strange, right?
Yeah.
I would have expected in Cape Town that there would have been more.
Yeah, and there were a lot of foreign students there as well.
Okay.
So, and it was, you know, a year before the general election. So that was really a great year for us. And also, we learned a lot about, you know, Cape Town and the environments around it.
Okay.
So it was a full year from there onwards. During that year, I also did my thesis or scription at that stage around borrowing money internationally and what will happen if the exchange rate fall and if you then do some long-term investments on it. And I had the discussions with my father at that stage. Mm-hmm. On the farm, we were doing all kinds of vegetables and one-year crops, and I said to him, you know, we need to get into an export game. And using his experience in agriculture and my newly found knowledge around international finance and that, I got so interested around the topic that after my MBA, I went to the farm. And we looked at different export alternatives. And, and that's how we then started in 1994 with table grapes, exporting table grapes and citrus.
And the farm is called Skombi?
It's called Skombi Landgoed, yes.
Landgoed, okay. Yeah. So you came out of the thesis, went back to the farm.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously coming out of very nice corporate offices, very corporate type of lecture theatres at UCT, and then onto the farm. What was that transition like?
Yeah, it was it was quite heavy at that stage. Like I said, the farm was in a transition process. So the first table grapes and citrus and that, you know, we had to do the feasibility and then really work in the land. So I worked in the land for that period. So I was there full time for about 2.5 years.
Okay.
And then I decided to join IBM, you know, from there, which was probably another big jump for me and my wife.
And why that decision?
At that stage on the farm, there was a lot of family politics and that, and it impacted my life, my private life, to the extent that I felt it would be better to have some distance between me and the family. So okay. Even though I moved away, I never disconnected from the farm. So I remained very much involved, you know, until today I'm very involved there as well. But it helped, you know, to help to join IBM. I continued really on the more the management advisory, but being at IBM, it got colored with IT and really the strategic application of information in your business. So slowly I moved into the IT strategy world, the IT governance world.
But up until that point, IT was not an area that you were specifically thinking you're going to get into.
Yeah.
So it just happened that you were employed at IBM at the time.
Exactly. At IBM, IBM had a consulting group called IBM Consulting Group, who did primarily strategic consulting. And as I said, you know, I then moved with a group more into the IT strategy, IT governance consulting. We assisted large organizations also to prepare for outsourcing. That's how I got into the more the outsourcing world, but I never got into the details of technology. Okay. You know, it was always around how do you utilize information, how do you utilize the people who's running the information for the strategic benefit of your organization. That's been my history, and even today I'm not a technology freak. You know, I believe there's a lot of other people who know a lot more about the actual technologies. So for me, it's more around the strategic application of information.
Talking from a technology point of view, then I know then you went on to found your own business at the boom of the internet at the time. What drove you into wanting to now move into your own business? I mean, it would have probably made sense to go possibly into agriculture again or look for something there, but you went into an internet business.
Yeah, it was in 1998, 1999. You know, just at the height of the internet boom. So a couple of us at IBM decided to move out of IBM and start our own business.
Okay.
And it was really a great experience, you know, and that's where I also learned that how important it is to pick like-minded people when you want to go into a venture like this. You know, it's all the value, a common value system is more important than the actual strategy. So we had really great fun in doing that. It was, again, around the same theme of even what I'm doing today. It was around the strategic application of how you utilize the internet at that stage. So we had some consultants doing it. Okay. I was leading the business development and the sales side. And then we had some actual developers who did internet presence for companies at that stage. After about 3 years, we were contracted by T-Systems to help them with one of their big customers to redesign their complete internet presence. And we were busy with that for about a year. And then we as shareholders decided it makes sense for us to be part of a bigger organization. We can have a bigger impact and more significance. So we started to engage with them, and that's how they acquired us.
Ah, interesting. I mean, coming from, like, once again, I want to go back to the farming environment and then quickly now moving into a very corporate environment. Was that something that you'd already envisaged for yourself, or growing up, was it always kind of like you'd be still in the more family business?
One of the lessons that I learned while I was on the farm is that it's very important to have your own dream and your own vision. My dad was a very strong character, and he had a specific vision, you know, of his children joining him on the farm.
Okay, I would, yeah. And, which makes sense.
Yeah, and I realized at that stage, you know, that I respect and admire his vision, but that it's very important to be authentic, to have your own vision. And if there's an overlap, then it's great. If there's not an overlap, then it's fine. Every one of us must have our own vision, our own purpose. I'm a very spiritual person. I believe in standing up in your own identity and living your own purpose. So for me, my faith gives me a lot of confidence so that everything that I approach in life, you know, I feel I approach it well anchored, and therefore I approach it with confidence, and then I drive it through. You know, some of it's easy, some of it's not that easy, but that's really the way that I approach it. So I did not have any specific view around family business or farming or IT or anything. Even today, that's not my primary focus. My primary focus is to make a difference and to use my talents that I got from, you know, from God to really make a significant difference to other people that comes in, you know, that cross my ways. And some of it may be in agriculture, some of it may be in IT, but for me that's just the scene in which the play is playing itself out.
Absolutely. And then now T-Systems South Africa, you fulfill the role of MD, and you've been doing that for quite some time now. You've been in T-Systems for 17 years. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about what does T-Systems actually do, and who is T-Systems in South Africa? I know for a lot of us, you know, when we think T-Systems, you might think T-Mobile or Bayern Munich. but I know that in South Africa, it's got quite a specific role that it plays within the ICT sector.
So my journey, as I said earlier, started with T-Systems when they acquired Evolution at that stage. We had a period that we had to work back as part of the acquisition process in T-Systems. And I was really privileged in T-Systems. Every 2 years, my role changed, which kept it fresh for me. It was also always some strategic kind of role in terms of business development or solution crafting. At some stage, I was also running one of the production units, a systems integration unit.
Okay.
And then I went into sales, and sales is quite a challenging environment in an organization like that.
Yeah.
So T-Systems, 70% of it's owned by Deutsche Telekom in Germany. And then in South Africa, we've got 20% that's owned by Black Staff, and 10% by an educational trust that we utilize to fund a number of the skills development and education initiatives that we have. The T-Systems brand and what it's meant for me and also in South Africa, you know, I link it back to the overall purpose. I believe it's a big privilege to build a bridge between a country like Germany and a country like South Africa and utilize the best of innovation and practices that they have in Germany and bring it to South Africa and localize it to make a difference in South Africa.
Absolutely.
And that's what we've been doing, you know, for the past 20 years. So this year is actually our 20th anniversary in the country.
Okay.
It's quite amazing to think that I've been part of it for 17 years, but that's really for me the way that I see it and the way that I approach it every day. So it's a privilege, but it's also a big responsibility. If I just think around the Rivia acquisition that we concluded at the end of 2009.
So Rivia was the state-owned ICT company.
Yes, Rivia.com was a state-owned ICT company owned by Eskom and Transnet at that stage. And as part of a strategic decision of disinvesting out of non-core assets, it then became available on the open market with an open tender process. I was involved in it. I drove it for 3 years. It took quite a long time to conclude because it was complex and so big. But for me, it was a very good example of how you can utilize the scale of a big company like Deutsche Telekom to come and make a difference also in South Africa. So it took a long time. It was complex because it was an acquisition plus two new outsourcing deals, one with Eskom and one with Transnet. And all three of those deals had to be concluded at the same time.
And when was that?
It concluded at the end of 2009.
2009, okay.
Yeah, so since then, it's been quite a intense journey at both those organizations and also with Arrivia. We fully integrated Arrivia into T-Systems, and we started a process of refreshing really the IT environments of both Eskom and Transnet. In the early days, it wasn't easy. We did a lot of IT transformation projects at both organizations. We paid a lot of penalties because we could not deliver according to the quality standards that we contracted to in the early days.
Can you explain that? Because I mean, I've heard you mention that before, but maybe it's not something that other people can easily understand. You know,
so when you in the traditional outsourcing world, you know, why would a company outsource? They would outsource when they sell assets, if they need some capital, or to cut cost, because you assume that the company that you're outsourcing to can do things better than you can. So with applying less resources and therefore lower cost. And also the third element is to improve service quality. And therefore, when you take over an environment like Eskom and Transnet was really first generation outsourcing contracts, then you take over a current mode in terms of people, in terms of processes, in terms of technology, and you work towards a future mode where you've refreshed the environment. You know, again, applying different technologies or different practices, etc.
Okay.
And you've got service levels that go from the current mode to the future mode. Now, you've got a certain period of time to transform, normally between 6 and 18 months to transform.
Which means to move from what is now, that is maybe suboptimal, into an optimized phase that you promised when you bid for the business.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, if you can't get to that optimized phase, then you still deliver service quality based on the current mode, and that's when you start paying penalties with a good contract. So we paid significant.
I mean, without necessarily giving away confidential, but what types of, are we talking hundreds of rands, tens of thousands?
No, we're talking millions of rands per annum.
Sure.
But there's formulas in which you can work it back, etc. But at that stage, we were just bleeding.
Yeah.
And it's actually.
And what role were you playing in the business at the time?
Initially I drove the whole Arrivia deal.
Okay.
It was quite a big deal. So we had a very dedicated bid team that drove the deal for 3 years. Then I was the integration person that integrated Arrivia and the delivery organizations of Arrivia with T-Systems. And I was head of sales, and when I took over as MD, we actually got, within 2 weeks of taking over as MD, we got 45 letters of breach from one of these customers, breach of contract, because we were not delivering the right quality. So I was MD at the time. And I'm very proud, again, of how we worked in collaboration, you know, the international organization, the local organization of T-Systems, and then also the IT organizations of Eskom and Transnet, you know, really, really got together, and we lifted our game. And still today, I'm very proud of, you know, of the quality of the service that we deliver. You can always do better. And I'm not talking about, you know, specific incidents, but I mean, overall, we are 99.9% within the SLAs, the service levels, you know, that we committed to and that we contracted to.
And but I know you've got 160 odd other customers. You know, I know T-Systems is famous for those two very significant contracts. How's it been building a business now, you know, coming into the country as a multinational and then building a business that is, you know, multifaceted, multi-industry? What's that journey been like?
Yes, it's very important for us. I mean, a big part of our business is scale-driven. You know, and you can compare it again with agriculture today. You know, if you don't have certain scale, then you don't have access to specific markets. You don't have specific global procurement leverage that you have over, you know, with some technology providers. And it's very important for us at T-Systems that we are not dependent only on a select number of customers for our revenue. It's strategically not right from a portfolio perspective. And therefore, we've got a big drive to also extend our reach into the private sector. Mm. So, as you said, we've got, you know, a number of other customers. We are primarily focused on medium and large enterprises. We are quite good to take over a complete IT estate and then optimize it and drive synergies and cost savings out of it. The development and the emergence of Industry 4.0 and digital transformation has given it a slightly different flavor.
Yes.
But for me, again, it's just a new phase that we're going into that we need to adapt to. And it's now a lot more business focused and business relevance is a lot more important when we engage with our customers. But in essence, it's the same for us to say, on the one side, you need to optimize your commodity type infrastructure business. And then in parallel, you need to add value around helping them with their business processes and utilizing technology, some of it your own, some of it partners. I mean, we're a very partner-focused organization, utilizing the technologies of your partner. Okay. And then providing a seamless service, you know, to the business customers of our customers.
It's interesting because I would say many companies today say they're doing IT or ICT or telecommunications. And you're saying once again that it's just a different flavor. Is it really just a different flavor in terms of this Industry 4.0? Or are we seeing more seismic, more fundamental shifts in this space?
There's obviously a lot more shifts. But again, just in my time in the industry the past 20 years, in the beginning we did IT strategies. You know, when I was at IBM,
yeah,
we did IT strategies for companies. And the way we did it is you first did a business strategy, and from the business strategy, you did an IT strategy, and you ensured that it was aligned. So that was a big part of the strategic consulting that you did at that stage from a business perspective. There was a strategic alignment model which said that your IT governance and business governance must link the two together to ensure continuous alignment. That then went, you know, into a new world now where we do digital strategies.
Okay.
Now, it's different, but one must be careful to make it too complex and to create a lot of fear around it. For me, the whole digital world and Industry 4.0 is really utilizing mostly current technologies, but it slowly goes up into your business processes, and it's not limited anymore to your IT environment and your IT processes. And stuff like cloud gives you the ability to scale it very quickly.
Okay.
And also takes away a lot of the problems that you may have had in terms of the rollout, etc. So speed is becoming it's not becoming a constraint as it was many years ago. And then there's other dynamics around it, like the difference between Industry 4.0 and the previous industrial revolution is that it seems that technology is not creating more jobs. And that's quite a fundamental difference between the previous one and Industry 4.0.
Yes, especially in a South African context.
Yes, it's... you know, it links for me, it brings it back for me to the purpose, you know, from a purpose perspective. I've got the privilege to work for a multinational, but I'm a very much born and bred South African, and Africa is my passion. And therefore, I believe we must be careful to embrace Industry 4.0 and the benefits of that without looking at the realities of what it does. Mm. I mean,
Before we move then into that, I want to just make sure that we understand what we mean by Industry 4.0. Just a quick synopsis of what it is and what it implies.
Industry 4.0 is really taking the use of technology one step further, and automation is becoming a big part of that. Okay. So, as I said earlier, for me it's really combining a number of technologies. Some of it may be new, most of it is not new, and taking the innovation of technology that happened over the past 30 years and combining that and utilizing it within your business. Now, the combination of that brings the exponential impact of digitization into the world today, and that makes it very unpredictable. And the unpredictability also creates fear. I mean, any organization that's doing a strategy today, they don't really know what the future may hold because they can't take the history and project it to the future.
Okay.
You know, most strategy work is done by that. You accept the current paradigm of the world that you live in will continue in the future, and based on that you make certain decisions. With Industry 4.0, it changes that world. So you can start adopting practices like scenario planning, but it's still a very unpredictable world where the industry definitions as we know it today may change in future. And again, just your mindset and the context within which you look at the future is really challenged. Mm. So it's a complete different world. And again, what's the driver of it?
Yes. What's different? What's different from the .com era, from the web 2.0 era? What's the fundamental difference now that makes it so much more unpredictable?
I think it's a combination of these technologies, you know, and a combination on different levels from your networking business, storage, what storage has done to your computing environment, the computing environment itself, combining computing and storage into a cloud environment, and how cloud can help you to hyperscale, you know, certain applications. So it's a combination of a number of those innovations. So all of it has happened almost in isolation in the past 30 years.
Okay.
And now, due to the access also of that intellectual property and intellectual capital enabled by the internet, it has got a big impact on the business.
Okay.
Now, one of the things as well in terms of the difference is between the previous one and the industry year or Industry 4.0 now is automation. So with Internet of Things, it creates intelligence in all your business processes, and therefore you can do a lot more with your business processes and optimize a lot more around your business processes.
Okay. So it's the coming together of all these technological advancements.
Yes.
And it creates this like perfect storm.
Yeah.
Which then becomes very unpredictable.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now back to South Africa and Africa, because the reality is that by and large we are importers of IP in as far as, you know, the digital world is concerned. Where does that leave you?
I think the first thing is to understand and to contextualize in your own environment that Industry 4.0 will not necessarily create new jobs. In fact, if you look at a country like South Africa, we've got the second highest Gini coefficient in the world currently. Mm. Which means the difference between those who have and those who haven't is the second largest in the world. And that's not a nice statistic to be part of. And it's something that I guess all of us, all the leaders in the country, not only political leaders, but all business leaders must look at very critically and say, what are they doing to address that? Because if we can't address that, then the country that we stay in and that we want, where we want to raise our kids, I don't believe will be sustainable.
Yeah.
So if you look at Industry 4.0, one of the key attributes of that is automation. Automation is enabled, as I said earlier, around providing intelligence into these processes. So it will lead to taking out lower skilled people out of the workplace and be replaced by different kinds of robotics and devices. And when you do that, the whole Industry 4.0 lends itself for higher educated people.
Yes.
In terms of the long-term trend of where it will lead to. And that will naturally just accelerate the Gini coefficient trend. So we need to be very, very deliberate of how we then apply the benefits of Industry 4.0 in a way that's sustainable within South Africa. You can't ignore the new digital trends. You can't build a wall to keep it out. You can't.
No.
It's a global phenomenon, and therefore we need to just be cognizant about it, lean into it, and be deliberate then on how we in South Africa can leverage the benefits and then also mitigate the shadows that come from that.
But how do we do that when it's the speed and pace at which things are happening, whether it's something as simple as a new app that gets launched or new cloud services that get taken to market from a global perspective? Because really we're not competing with ourselves, and we're certainly not competing just within our continent. It's a global phenomenon. So how do we lean into a situation like that?
I can tell you, in T-Systems, we've started adopting an approach that we call net positive. And I'll give you one specific example then two examples around net positive. Net positive and shared values is really to say that consciously we as organizations in South Africa want to make sure that we don't just reduce our impact on the economy or on the environment, as was the a trend a couple of years ago. We want to make sure that wherever we touch our customers, with our customers, the environment, and even the economy, that we make a net positive contribution back into society.
Okay.
Now that's a very ambitious target to set ourselves. We need to find different ways on how we're going to track it. It's an emerging practice that comes out of the developed world. So I won't claim that we've found the way to do it. But if you then adopt a shared value approach is saying that you are making money while you are doing good.
Okay.
So more and more we are pulling our corporate social investment, our education, etc., into the normal value chain of these systems. Otherwise, it just doesn't become sustainable.
It's always like a charity.
It becomes a handout or a charity, and we're pulling it into our value chain. By doing that, I believe we are starting to see the impact of what net positive could be in our environment. I believe every organization and the country must also adopt that kind of approach, because it is not that simple.
Yeah.
To give you an example, we started as a real corporate social investment initiative in a rural area in Hazyview. We started to put down a learning center there in collaboration with some other partners, and that has developed into a full ICT academy there in the middle of nowhere. But it also doesn't help that you create skilled people in the rural area without an opportunity for them to have jobs there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
they might be better off getting skills in whatever jobs are available there.
Exactly. So what happened, most of them then came anyway to Gauteng or to one of the big cities. So what we started to do now is to create a service desk in Hazyview. We've already moved the T-Systems, our T-Systems service desk, to Hazyview as part of a pilot, and it's now in full production.
Okay.
And we are now inviting other customers and like-minded organizations to also participate in that. So what is the value proposition of something like that? It's in the rural area, so it helps rural employment in that area. It helps with real skills development there. It's 25 to 30% cheaper environment.
So it's good for business?
So it's good for business. And I can tell you the people are so incredibly grateful to have a dignified job in that area. So they are incredibly committed to be part of that. So now we don't look at that anymore as a corporate social investment. It's really part of our
business, yeah.
Really part of our core business. So that's one example. Another example is that just last week we've launched our partner, we've launched Open Telecom Cloud, which is the first hyperscale cloud that will be hosted in South Africa.
Okay.
And a big part of that is also to ensure that not only data is going out the country, but that we can ensure that the impact of cloud can also be net positive around the economy in South Africa. Again, Industry 4.0 and cloud is synonymous. And one of the impacts of cloud in the IT industry is it takes away a lot of job classes, in terms of server engineers and storage and database, etc., out of the country. So in essence, by just allowing these big hyperscale clouds to run in other areas, other parts of the world, we were just allowing, jobs to be exported out of the country. And it's not just the direct impact of the people that work for those companies. It's also, the knock-on impact of other people that must provide the cooling and the
Absolutely.
And the electricity, etc., around those data centers. So by bringing it into the country, we believe it will help again to enable a net positive outcome. And it will create a partner ecosystem that will allow, again, new skills and new jobs to be created within the country.
But then the question then would be, can we compete on that scale and on that level from a South Africa perspective? Because it's not something that we've been akin to doing.
Yes, it's something that you must watch very carefully. To spin up a cloud environment is not that difficult. What we are doing is we're leveraging innovation again from Germany and from China. So Deutsche Telekom has got a partnership with Huawei in China, where they've created this open telecom cloud environment, which started off as an infrastructure as a service solution. It moved into platform as a service, and now it's got software as a service capabilities as well. So what we are doing in South Africa with Huawei and also Huawei South Africa is that we're bringing that development roadmap to South Africa. So it will be exactly the same version of OTC that's running in Germany will also run in South Africa. So it's not just a specific snapshot of what they have today. We're buying into, in essence, we're leveraging and moving into the slipstream of that big development roadmap.
Global roadmap.
And that's what you need. There's very few of these hyperscale clouds that who have survived. There's big technology players globally who's decided to stop the race.
Absolutely.
And therefore, we also, from a South African perspective, don't create our own. We're leveraging that from Germany and China and bringing it to South Africa. And therefore, I do believe we will continuously be competitive for as long as Germany and China is putting in development capital into that, against the big US hyperscale clouds. We will benefit from it.
Now, for a tricky question, do you see South Africa becoming self-sufficient from in terms of embracing this digital world Industry 4.0? I mean, there's the one aspect as a multinational, you leverage your global partners. But there's also the other side of saying, when do we start creating innovation from within South Africa and take it to them?
You know, Mpumi, there's already some real good examples in South Africa and in Africa around areas such as health and around financial systems where innovation from a technology perspective in those industries has been leading innovations from a global perspective. And I believe we must just continue to stimulate and to create environments for those people to take up their skills and do it. I think programs like this Disrupt is also helping, you know, potential entrepreneurs and technology people to believe in themselves so that they can continue to do that. Mm. I don't think it's really about self-sufficiency. It's really about making sure that we are not completely just exposed to almost handouts again, you know, from a developed world. So for me, leaning into it and again deliberately making sure that we as a country don't get exploited, but that we can also co-invest into that and that we can get the right kind of benefits out of that. For me, that is important. And I think OTC for me is a good example on that. As I mentioned earlier, it will create a platform, it, you know, for developers and maybe startups to come up with, you know, with solutions that they can then run from OTC.
Yes.
It's an open stack environment, so it will be very cost effective since it's open stack. And I believe it creates a, you know, again, an opportunity for Africa, you know, starting with South Africa. We've got a lot of innovative people here. I'm very proud of our diversity of skills and different kinds of people. And therefore, I believe we are very well positioned, you know, for Industry 4.0 and not only leading Africa into that, but also playing a significant role, you know, into the rest of the world.
Mm. And you see that this type of approach that T-Systems is taking, is this something that other multinationals will start to gravitate towards? Or do you maybe perhaps hope for that to happen more?
Yeah, look, one of the attributes, again, of Industry 4.0 is that partnering is really important.
Yes.
Our partnering on this one with our German counterparts and with China and with Huawei, and that is just one example. But if you look at the different layers of partnering that we're going into this around the application environment, you know, for example, SAP is a very strong partner of us, not only in Germany but also in South Africa. So they are a core partner in this. They're a multinational as well. The multinational providers in South Africa, the technology providers that we partner with, SAP, Microsoft, etc., Huawei is really committed also to the country. But it is taking hands with those multinational partners, but then also enabling localization. You know, localization of local skills, local companies,
okay,
and making sure that we address again the country needs of upliftment and creating new capabilities while we are doing our normal business. And it's possible. I mean, it's possible. We've done it, like I said, for the past 20 years. We're getting better at it. Currently, we've got a level 2 rating in terms of the new codes from BE rating, and I believe one of the key reasons that we have a rating like that is because we integrate these initiatives so closely into our overall value chain.
Okay.
So even though we're not a technology provider, we are a service provider, it tends to put even more challenges to you when it comes to finding the right rating. But we are doing it, and therefore I believe we're doing it in a responsible way that's very much aligned to the economic, socioeconomic realities of the country.
Okay. So, Gert, I'm going to shift a little bit now and talk about your partnership with Wade van Niekerk, who's obviously well-known to all of us in South Africa and globally for that matter. I mean, he's a well-known figure. It's quite unusual for an IT company to be you know, partnering with an athlete. What is the thinking around that? And you know, this is before the Olympics, you know, uncertain times around athletes, etc. What is the thinking around that from your perspective?
Yeah, for me, I'm very proud of the association with Wade. And as you said, we started our relationship with him, you know, before he became so famous. And that makes it even more special where we sit today. The original intent was to really find a public figure who's had the same value system compared to T-Systems. Again, from a T-Systems perspective, a lot of our technology in that is not visible. You know, I mean, I've grown up on a farm. There you can smell and you can touch and you can see a lot of the stuff that you do. In the technology world, specifically when you're in outsourcing, a lot of your life is reflected in spreadsheets and PowerPoints.
Yeah.
And we were looking for, as I said, a public figure with the same value system. And it took a lot of engagement with a number of people to find someone like Wade, because there's always a risk when you associate yourself with an individual as opposed to a team. And therefore the whole ecosystem also around Wade was very important during that period. And for us, Wade is a South African. You know, he's very much a South African.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know him very well. He's a very humble South African, but he competes in globally, and he doesn't only just compete globally; he wins globally.
Handsomely.
Yeah, and that's obviously something that we are all very proud of, you know, for him and with him, and we believe from a T-Systems South Africa perspective, we've got a similar value system to say we are privileged and humbled, you know, because we've got the link to the practices and technologies and innovation in Germany, but we've got also our own unique diversity and passion of you know, in South Africa, and we can combine that. So we're South African.
Yes.
99.99% of the people working in T-Systems South Africa is South Africans. But we compete globally and we're delivering globally. We've got a number of global customers that we support from South Africa, and it's big brands like Heineken and Corner, the lift company, that we support from South Africa. So
bringing the jobs back into South Africa.
Yeah, bringing the jobs back into South Africa. And it's, again, for me, part of this net positive topic, you know, to say as we optimize when we bring IT services to a customer, as we optimize, there's always the risk of taking jobs out because you need to optimize, but then bringing in work from other parts of the world back into South Africa is a way in which we can keep the net positive theme going to make sure that we are sustainable. So Wade van Niekerk, that was where we started it. And then there's a lot of other similarities. I mean, he 0.1 of a second makes a big difference for him.
Yes.
And the same for us around our quality of service, you know, 99.8 versus 99.9 service level achievement make a big difference in our lives.
Yes.
And it's that attention to detail and the way that we apply ourselves in what we do and being proud of what we do. Wade is giving us that value system, not only for us internally as T-Systems employees, but also our partners and our customers, you know, that we are working with.
Yeah. And Gert, I mean, you know, staying on the performance conversation around Wade, you yourself, I mean, you've summited Mount Kilimanjaro, and a lot of people don't know you did it with one leg. You've got a prosthetic. And I mean, I've heard you tell the story around that, but you know, that is quite a disruptive thing to do. Why would you decide to do that? And how does that frame into yourself as someone who's been in this industry for 20 plus years?
Yeah, you know, it's climbing Kilimanjaro was not a bucket list topic for me. It was one of those things that happened to me, again, from a pure spiritual perspective. You know, I don't believe in any coincidences, so that wasn't a coincidence as well. I had to introduce two people to one another, and I knew them both, but obviously they didn't know each other. And the one was a guide. She took people up Kilimanjaro. So when I introduced them, they said, "Well, why don't we make up a group to go and climb Kilimanjaro?" I said, "That's fine. You know, let's go and do that." That's really as simple as it started. It was a real significant event in my life, and if I talk to other people, you know, everyone who climbed Kilimanjaro got something really a number of life lessons out of it, and therefore I don't think I'm unique in that. Mm. I learned a number of, you know, I believe life and leadership lessons out of it. Probably the one that I remember most is the concept of pole pole, you know, which means, you know, slowly.
Yeah.
I mean, I prepared quite well for Kilimanjaro physically, and then when we started, the guide put me directly behind him because I was the weakest, obviously, of the group. And he started walking at such a slow pace that I just couldn't believe it. You know, I was ready. I wanted to climb this mountain.
Yeah.
And he just forced me into a slower rhythm. And I learned a lot from that, you know, to follow a leader, to trust in the leader. And the leader knew what pace we needed to go to get to the next camp in time. And every day, just before sunset, we reached the next camp. There were a lot of people who came past us, and most of them normally ended up, you know, before they reached the next camp. If you climb too quickly, you know, you start to vomit, etc. Mm. So pole in achieving your goals is really, really important. You know, to make sure that every step counts, but not to try and rush things to reach your goals.
Fantastic. Gert, I mean, we could talk for hours, you and I, and we've done that in the past. Before we wrap up, I'm going to read a quote, something that you were quoted on in the news, and you said, "Data is the new currency. One of the key enablers of digitization is the cloud, and it's no good running away from it. We must lean into it. As Africans, we must make it work for us." And you've kind of alluded to that as well in the conversation. So with that as a backdrop, your vision for Africa in this digitally transforming world and Industry 4.0, in a nutshell.
Yes, I believe we've got a lot of strengths that we can take into this new industry. We've got good education. We've got a diverse set of skills. We're very passionate people, and therefore, if we lean into it, as I said earlier, I believe we can get the most out of it. And there's a lot of examples already within South Africa in different industries that we, you know, where we can do it if we partner with other people and partner with like-minded people. If we go into it with an open agenda and not try to again shy away from it or put policies against it, but to really embrace it, I believe it's very exciting, you know, for every one of us individually to refresh ourselves,
yeah.
You know, in terms of new future and also for the rest of the country. So I think it's really possible.
And then very quickly, your definition of disruption, what does it mean to be disruptive?
I believe it is being bold in executing what you believe in, and not just stay with the status quo. Surrounding yourself with people that you trust, without letting them to keep you in your box, but really testing your ideas and being open-minded, and then once you've got a position to have the courage to execute on it.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Gert Skoombi, the MD of T-Systems South Africa. It's been another really, really engaging conversation on Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo. Thank you to T-Systems as our sponsors on the show. We look forward to seeing you again next week with another guest. Really, thank you for joining us, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Mpumi. CliffCentral.com.